You're listening to Jonesy on KBOO Portland. Today's show is dedicated to the memory of Kai Emmons, author, screenwriter, and teacher, and one of my favorite guests over the years. In early 2021, Kai was diagnosed with bulbar onset ALS, a debilitating disease which first takes away the power of speech before affecting the rest of the body. Given the bleak prognosis and the breakdown of her physical abilities, Kai decided to end her life last January through Oregon's Death with Dignity program. Kai very kindly agreed to a last interview, which we recorded over Zoom on December 23, 2022, and first aired on January 12, 2023, just 10 days after Kai's death. Kai was using a text-to-voice device at that point and was able to type with only one finger on her right hand. It was a slow process, and I'm sure a tiring one for her, but her wisdom, insight, strength, and dedication to living a good life and dying a good death shine through, despite the sadness and finality of our conversation. So here from January 2023, a rebroadcast of my last interview with the much-loved and much-missed Kai Emmons.
Keep a fire burning in your eye. Pay attention to the open sky. You never know what will be coming down.
Good morning and welcome to Jonesy, the show that brings you conversations with some of the most interesting people in the world of books, podcasts, radio, theater, music, and humor, guaranteed to entertain and enlighten. I'm the host of Jonesy, Ken Jones. No relation, by the way. Today's episode is a sad one for me. It's the last interview with one of my favorite authors and guests, Kai Emmons. I first met Kai in October 2018 when she came to the KBOO studios for a live in-person interview on her novel Weather Woman. Due to the pandemic, our subsequent conversations were all conducted remotely through Zoom, the first for Kai's story collection Vanishing in June 2020, then for her novel Sinking Islands, the sequel to Weather Woman in July 2021, and most recently for Kai's last two published books, the novels Unleashed and Livid, just last September. Kai was diagnosed with bulbar onset ALS in February 2021. It's a debilitating disease which takes away the power of speech before affecting the rest of the body. While some people with ALS, such as Stephen Hawking, can live for many years, the life expectancy for those with bulbar onset ALS is, on average, 2.5 years, and presently, there is no cure. Late last year, Kai made a decision to end her life through Oregon's Death with Dignity program. Initially planned for Kai's birthday on January 15th, she moved up the date to January 2nd, just 10 days ago. As she wrote on her blog in November, "In the last month or two, the disease has progressed and impinged on everything I do, slowing down every operation so it takes twice as long or more. Most of my activities require help. I no longer say yes to everything, and it is no longer possible to compartmentalize and pretend I'm normal, whatever normal means." I'm forever grateful to Kai for saying yes to my final interview request. We recorded our conversation again through Zoom on December 23rd. Kai was in her bedroom in Eugene, Oregon, and communicated using a text-to-voice device. Kai types her responses, and we hear those through the device's synthesized voice. But unlike our previous two interviews, Kai was now limited to typing with just one finger on her right hand. It was a slow process for her, and I'm sure a fatiguing one, but she was, as always, generous, direct, and filled with insight, enthusiasm, and brilliance. It was a privilege talking with Kai one last time, and I hope our conversation provides some comfort to her family, friends, and readers. Kai, welcome back. This is our fifth interview. We first talked in October 2018 for your novel, Weather Woman. That was live in the KBOO studios. We later talked during the pandemic for your story collection, Vanishing. again for the sequel to Weather Woman, Sinking Islands. And just a few months ago, in fact, for your newest novels, Unleashed and Livid, 2 in 1 month, incredible. As you know, and I think anyone listening to our conversation knows, I love your work. I love talking with you. So the interview today, and I had to kind of ramp myself up for it, is a sad one for me. And in all probability, it's our last one.
I think so. I have decided to do death with dignity on January 15th, my birthday.
Yes, and we should just go back and a little background on that. I should mention the disease taking your life, bulbar onset ALS, first took away your ability to speak. And as in our last two conversations, you'll be using a text-to-voice device called VoiceKeeper. You type in your replies, and now, as your husband Paul mentioned, you're limited to typing with one finger on your right hand, and then we'll hear those replies through the device's synthesized voice. So even your typing has been affected since we talked last, was just three months ago.
Yes. First, the disease just affected my voice and swallowing, but in the summer, it began to weaken my limbs and hands.
And to give a little background on bulbar onset ALS, you wrote that it's a fatal diagnosis, quote, "Some people, such as Stephen Hawking, live for decades, but for my kind of ALS, the prognosis is bleaker. 2 years is average." And it will be about 2 years, I think, in January. I think you were diagnosed February 2020 or 2021. And there's been no change in the diagnosis in that time, I assume, and no treatment that will help.
3 years, if you consider the year before the diagnosis, when I was losing my voice.
And due to your declining health with the prognosis for the disease, as you've already told us, you've decided to end your life through Oregon's Death with Dignity program. Now, you've been incredibly productive during that time. Two novels published in September, the completion of another novel, and I read part one of that in manuscript, published, I think, later in 2023. And your articles, your essays, including the regular blog posts, the weekly blog posts, I just wondered how you came to that decision, talking it over with family and friends. It couldn't have been easy for any of you.
I think the balance shifted so the difficulty of living day to day has outweighed the rewards of staying alive.
Fortunately, you live in Eugene, in Oregon, Kai, and the Death with Dignity Act, I looked it up, was enacted here in 1997 in the state. It basically allows terminally ill individuals to end their lives through self-administering a lethal dose of medications, and that's prescribed by a doctor. And the requirements are, one, you must be 18 or older, two, you're capable of making healthcare decisions for yourself, and three, you have a terminal illness that will lead to death within 6 months. That's the kind of the more critical part, and that's determined by attending physicians. What was the process like for you applying under the act and getting approved? So it's both medical and bureaucratic hurdles that you have to get by.
Right. I have to be able to give myself the drug. And it was a bit challenging at first because my doctor at OHSU has always seen me as strong and thought I would live a long time.
That's my impression of you too. My non-medical opinion.
I have been presenting myself that way. But he was not seeing me at my weaker moments, so I sort of had to convince him it really is time.
And you wrote in a blog post, this was just a few weeks ago, that it's difficult because doctors really aren't trained for something like this. They're trained to fix symptoms rather than, you wrote, to facilitate your attempt to slip away. And also there's the fear of malpractice, so it was difficult to get the approval, I guess, for all those reasons.
He would like me to stay alive.
Yes, and that's the Hippocratic Oath that they take. And you also mentioned on your birthday, there was another post you said, "I came into the world slowly, biding my time. A false alarm sent my mother to the hospital on Christmas, but I stayed in utero until 3 weeks later on January 15th, which seemed like an auspicious time to arrive. My current plan is to exit on that same day." So all I could say is, Kai, always the novelist, huh? I mean, tied up the loose ends.
I do feel as if I am wrapping up a life now in almost the same way I try to conclude a novel.
Now, I've been reading, I even mentioned a few of your blog posts on Medium.com, And I think you've been writing one just about every week since November 2020. I got to know you so well from the blog posts. And it was funny because in one of them you mentioned about a few years ago, I think before you were diagnosed, you were talking with another novelist friend and you guys swore to each other that you would never write memoir. And yet you're very open and very personal, of course, in these blog posts. When you wrote the one about the ALS diagnosis, so that's April 2021, it's called Still Here. You wrote, when I was diagnosed with an untreatable fatal disease 2 months ago, I had the sensation of stepping off a treadmill. There were slash are the expected existential thoughts brought on by the imminence of death. But alongside that, I became aware of a delightful silver lining. So much didn't seem to matter anymore. I had the feeling I was being lowered gently by many kind friends and acquaintances into a deep well. But it seems since then you've lived to the fullest, spending time with Paul, your son, the rest of your family, your friends. You've done book tours. I saw you here in Portland at Annie Bloom. I know you were at the Portland Book Festival just last month. You even went kayaking. To me, that's who you are, persistent, resilient, hopeful, loving, in the face of some difficult circumstances here. But still, it must have been hard for you. What helped you focus on the positive and not give in to despair, as I would assume some people might?
It has been maybe the happiest time of my life, I think, because it is in my DNA to be that way. And also because I've been surrounded by so many friends and loved ones, which has made a huge difference.
It's just amazing. You also write in that same blog post that you were a hospice volunteer for a few years, and you witnessed in that time several people dying. What did you learn from that experience? How has it prepared you for your own death?
I did that because I was interested in the philosophical aspects of death, and I came away with an understanding of how hard it can be to let go at the end. This will be different because I will inject the drug and then will have no choice.
Now, last month, you also wrote about taking your second guided trip on psilocybin mushrooms. At that point, you were feeling your body breaking down, your quality of life in sharp decline. And oddly, you had no desire to write more fiction, which is very unusual for you. You had that impulse your entire life. Before you took the mushrooms, your guide asked you to write down your intentions for the trip. And you wrote, "I want to learn how to detach from all that I love about life and to release any fear I have of death." Did the experience with the mushrooms help you realize those intentions?
I think it helped me take steps in that direction, though weirdly, I am still engaged in various ways like rewriting this novel. They say you die as you live, and that is appearing to be true.
And that's kind of what you took away from the guided trip?
I think what I took away is to not sweat the small stuff, which sounds so trite, but is deeply true.
And as another novelistic touch, I saw you posted a picture of you wearing ruby slippers for the mushroom experience. just perfect, like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz.
I have to send you a painting an artist who I met at VCC has sent me yesterday. It was of me giving feathers to a flying horse. She had me pose for it years ago, but I forgot about it. It's quite amazing. Apropos of nothing.
I would love to see it. Now, in your latest blog post, Kai, and this is, we're recording this on December 23rd, so this was 2 days ago, you wrote, "I have begun to imagine in more detail the moment in less than a month, January 15th, when I will inject a lethal substance into my feeding tube that will bring on my death. I'll be saying goodbye to everything and everyone who has made up my life. I picture myself vanishing from the room where I write, leaving behind a void in the bed in the shape of myself, like the chalk outlines made by police." And that word vanishing, we've talked about this before, it's a major theme in your work, both in the sense of being overlooked by others, you know, thought to be almost invisible, as in your story collection, Vanishing, and in the sense of people just mysteriously disappearing, as in your most recent novel, Unleashed. And death, of course, is the ultimate vanishing, at least on the physical plane. How have you come to terms with it? And has your own fiction, you know, talking about characters who have been overlooked or who have disappeared mysteriously or otherwise, how has that helped you come to terms with this?
Well, First, I should say that both of my first two pub-ish novels ended with a death, and I vowed after that I would never end a book that way again. But I have been fascinated with the role death plays in life as the proverbial elephant in the room. I doubt if we would make art if we weren't going to die.
And as much as we try not to talk about it in at least American society, that might be changing a little, but it seems like people would rather change the subject and not think about it. Though it's something, it's the fate of everyone.
I have made it my mission to bring it front and center now.
Now, when we did our interview for your novel, Unleashed, you called it a story about transformation. And when you were writing it, you said your body was telling you something, especially when you lost the power of speech. Some of your senses became more powerful, like the ability to listen and take in information. And we looked at death just now as a kind of vanishing, but it's also a transformation, maybe another stage in your own transformation, what you call in a blog post, my next journey. Nobody knows what happens after we die. There's all sorts of speculation, and there's people who figure they're experts in it, but there's no proof. How do you envision that stage, that journey? Have you thought about that? I can't see how you wouldn't, given your imagination.
Oh, yes, I have. And I really am open. I mostly think I will transmute into energy that will be incorporated into another living thing. I hope not to be reincarnated because I fear coming back as a rat, but I would like to again, so you can see my thoughts are all over the map.
You're listening to Jonesy on KBOO Community Radio. On today's show, we're talking with author and screenwriter Kai Emmons, who ended her life on January 2nd through Oregon's Death with Dignity program. You're actually still polishing up a manuscript of a new novel, and you were kind enough to let me read the first part of that, which I did. Loved it. Its working title is Duel, Duel, D-U-E-L and D-U-A-L. The main character is Neil O'Malley. He's 33 years old. He dropped out of a PhD program in history to join a monastery. Then he left the monastery after about 5 years to teach English at a public high school in New Jersey in Atlantic City. The fact that Neil is 33 years old and he befriends a fellow teacher named Trinity White and spent time as a monk, and you mentioned Thomas Merton a lot, it makes me think there's a religious component to the book.
Yes, there is, though I do not consider myself particularly religious. But I was interested in exploring issues of good and evil and what makes people do heinous things like our former president, what makes people cruel and racist.
I definitely got that, even just from reading the first part. I see the title, Duel with an E, Duel with an A, as a duel between good and evil. The dual nature of humans, and in the book, one human in particular, the main character, Neil. And just to take one example of that duality, on Halloween in the book, Neil goes trick-or-treating with his girlfriend and his girlfriend's daughter, who's 12 years old, Flora. Neil is dressed as a monk, and the daughter goes as Charles Manson. Kind of opposite poles. What attracted you, Kai, to the subject of evil and our dual nature?
I think it's because of what has been unleashed in our country over the last 6 years or so. It is so hard for me to understand how people get to these extreme places.
Yes, I feel exactly the same way. I just don't understand how. Well, you look at the news, some politicians who were supposedly legitimately elected, and they're just awful, awful people, and seem actually to make that their entire calling card. Who could be more awful than the next?
I can't say the novel penetrates it really, but that is where I began.
Oh, yeah, actually, I want to talk a little bit about that. Several of your books we've talked about in the past were inspired by actual events, so Climate Change for Weather Woman and Seeking Islands, where the main character has the superpower of being able to change the weather. You were inspired by school shootings, which unfortunately still go on many each year. Something beyond my comprehension why this is allowed to go on. That was for your book, His Mother's Son. Wildfires, which you experienced near your home in Eugene, you used that for Unleashed. I think Live It, you were inspired by the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings and how angry most of us got that the women were ignored, and Brett Kavanaugh's kind of bro-ish beer guzzling behavior was enough to get him on the Supreme Court, which is shameful. Now, towards the end of part one in the new book, Neil learns about a white supremacist movement in town. It's a group calling themselves the Atlantic City Skins, which I looked up. They actually exist. That must have been an inspiration for the novel, addressing white nationalism and racism, which I think was always there, but now it just seems more out in the open.
Yes. I thought about how interpenetrated it is around the country. No place is immune.
That's true. Same thing with climate change. You have friends going, they're trying to decide where they're going to move, and I don't think there's any place that's safe. Now the manuscript then, Duel, are you almost finished with that? And what are the plans for publishing? With whom and when?
I am almost finished revising part two. My agent has read it and recommended some changes, and publication will be posthumous.
And I just read part one, and I can't wait to get to part two. So it's very engaging, not just an important read, but I think a very entertaining one, too. Now, the title story of your collection, Vanishing, and we talked about this when we did the interview for the book, contains some autobiographical elements based on a childhood friend of yours who developed early onset dementia. In the story, the character based on your friend is named Betsy, and her brain is shrinking from the dementia, and along with it, the memory she shares with your counterpart in the story, Marty. Marty's afraid that the memories she shares with Betsy are also vanishing. Marty's fear is even stronger since she had recently separated from her husband a few months ago, so she thought a lot of those memories were gone too. Now, you write in the story, we mentioned this line before, which I love, she felt gone to him along with all those years they'd spent together. Poof. Have you talked about that with your husband, Paul, maybe others, on how to keep those memories alive even after you're gone?
I have actually. A friend and I have started recalling all we've done together, making lists and looking at photos. And I am hoping that will happen with others when we have a goodbye party on January 2nd, and Paul and I are going away for a few days after that, and I expect we will do the same.
I wanted to also cover, and I asked about this in our last interview, you agreed to be filmed by a documentary filmmaker, Sandra Luco, who was actually your classmate back at NYU Film School, along with people like Spike Lee and Barry Sonnenfeld and a few other luminaries. The documentary film is currently in progress, and it's about how you, along with your family and friends, are facing ALS and death with dignity. What would you like Sandra's film to show about your life in these final days?
She was there a bit later, and we only met on the internet at the beginning of the pandemic. But I think what I value about the film is that it explores how all of us, me and Paul and Ben and our friends and my sisters and nieces, are all facing the imminence of death on a known date.
And she'll be back. She's based in New York, but she'll be back in January for your Death with Dignity?
She will be, yes.
Well, was that a difficult decision to have her film something so personal like that? Well, again, I guess your objective here is to kind of bring death to the rest of us, how to lead a good life and go to a good death, which there several religions actually do, like Buddhism. But as I mentioned, in American society, we don't hear a lot of that.
There are members of my family would rather it weren't happy, but they know I would like it to happen, so they are making peace with it.
I love something that you wrote. I think this was also in one of the blog posts. You wrote about how more open you are now to communicating instead of fiction with fictional characters, based on real situations, but communicating your own personal feelings and what you're going through with the ALS and facing the death with dignity. And you wrote, I wonder if my greater openness to being known now is common to many people facing death. I have to think it must be. My proximity to death has also prompted people around me to be more open, saying things they would never have said to me even a few years ago. Perhaps this is another reason we should cherish the mystery of dying as much as we cherish birth. And I can't help but think that the documentary will help quite a bit to do that.
I feel there's not a lot of point in holding back.
Now, Kyle, one last question. There's no known cure for ALS at this time, but there's a lot of progress being made. In fact, I read the FDA recently approved a new treatment, which is still in its early stages. And I guess too early for it to help you at this point. Where can the listeners and myself, for that matter, find out more about ALS and the research to find a cure and maybe make a contribution to help make that happen?
There is the ALS Association and also a website called Everything ALS. The amount of research being done now is very gratifying. If only I could hold on another couple of years, there might be a cure.
That's why I think your friends, family, readers, and people like me will be very happy to help accelerate that process and a cure. And just sadly, it comes too late for you. Well, Kai, I want to thank you again so much for joining me today. Our fifth time, sad occasion, but I feel very blessed being able to talk with you about your work, your books, your life. Of course, you'll be greatly missed for me, your family, friends, and readers, but never forgotten. Thank you.
I have always enjoyed our conversation so much. Thank you, Kentucky.
Oh, thank you, Kai.
You know, I didn't mean Kentucky.
Oh, right. But that will be my new nickname. Kentucky Jones. Wow. That sounds like a whole TV series. I know that. Well, that's the speech, the text
can
to
edit
speech.
It out?
Yes. Or keep it in. You've been listening to Jonesy here on KABU Community Radio and our interview with author and screenwriter Kai Emmons, who ended her life on January 2nd through Oregon's Death with Dignity program. Fortunately, Kai lives on through her work. You can find out more about her books and essays and read her blog posts from the last year online at kaiemmonsauthor.com. That's Kai spelled C-A-I. And in the coming year, we can all look forward to a documentary on Kai from filmmaker Sandra Luco and the posthumous publication of her last novel. As mentioned, Kai's ability to speak was taken by ALS, and she was using a text-to-voice device in our interview. Toward the end of the conversation, Kai typed, "Thank you, Ken," which, owing to the device's overzealous autocorrect, came out as "Thank you, Kentucky." Kai got a big kick out of that, and it was such a delight to hear her laugh that I had to leave this part in, something I'll always remember with joy and sorrow. While there is no known cure for ALS at this time, the FDA recently approved a new treatment, which is still in the early stages of testing. You can help support this important work and honor Kai's memory by donating to the ALS Association online at als.org. I'd also like to thank Kai's amazing husband, Paul Calandrino, for all his help with our interview. May her memory be a blessing. Before we head out the door, just a reminder that you can listen to today's show and all our previous episodes anytime, on demand, at kboo.fm/program/Jonesy, J-O-N-E-S-Y, or just search for it on the KABU website. Jonesy, by the way, comes to you every other week on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Tune in for our next show on Thursday, January 26 at 11 a.m. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying,
doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?